Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8 says this, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." In 2005, in a fraternity house at a university in California, two pledges were forced into the basement of the fraternity house during a hazing ritual. They were told to do calisthenics in raw sewage while being interrogated and taunted by other fraternity members. For hours, they were ordered to repeatedly drink from a 5-gallon jug of water, which they did to the point that one young man collapsed, went into a seizure, and died from water intoxication. Now, we look at a scene and a story like that, and we must ask, why? What caused these two young men to be willing to put their lives on the line for a fraternity? And what caused these other young men to think this was okay to the point that they pushed the line so that this man died? The answer is actually very simple. The answer is peer pressure caused it. The pressure that these other young men would be disappointed if I didn't go along with everything they were saying. Or the pressure that someone would say I'm weak if I said, we need to stop, this is going too far. Peer pressure made the situation escalate, and peer pressure led to that young man's death. Now, if you're like me, your life has also been haunted by peer pressure. I have woken up realizing I've done something horrible, something I would have never done otherwise, just because I was around the wrong kind of people. I have been silenced in talking about the gospel by my peers. I have been pressured into doing things that were against school policy, against what my parents said, and even against the law, just because people wanted me to. And I've looked in the mirror in the morning and wondered before, what have I done? Perhaps we've never been a part of a horrible event like the one we just talked about, but we've all felt our lives touched by peer pressure in some way, haven't we? We have all, perhaps something as simple as laughing at a TV show because there's a laugh track and everyone else is laughing. Or perhaps we've done something as serious as smoking or drinking or having sex, just because the people around us are pressuring us to do it. Now, aren't you tired of having other people force you and pressure you and dictate to you what you're going to do? Aren't you tired of people pressuring you and you not knowing how to handle it? I tell you what, I'm tired of it. And I want to talk for a minute today about how we can beat peer pressure. I want us to look at Daniel and the story of his life inspired by God that teaches us exactly how to beat peer pressure, because Daniel was in a situation much more difficult, likely, than anything we are going to be involved in, and yet he remained pure before God. And I think you'll find that though this story is over 2,500 years old, it is still fresh and relevant today. It is from God, and it will help us if we'll listen to God. Let's start in Daniel 1 and verse 1. It says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles in the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, young men, in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of the time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, to Azariah Abednego." This is a part of the sad history, a sad chapter in the history of the people of Judah, because they have been taken into captivity because of their sin. And the great temple of God that Solomon has built has now been raided, the gold has been taken away, and now even the young men, the finest and best of God's people, have been taken. And so as all of God's people are there in the land of Babylon, these certain few young men are given a special place. They eat at the king's table. They are trained by the king's servant. They are given the best meat and the best wine, and they are taught the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. They're trying to make something out of these young men. And you can just imagine what it would be like to be a young man in this position, taken away from home, taken away from your family, and in a room full of a bunch of other young men in your position who are all eyeing each other with suspicion because you're all angling for the same job and trying to please the same people. That's where Daniel was. So with that in mind, I want you to look at and be impressed with what happens next. In verse 8, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king.' So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, 'Please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants.' So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine which they were to drink, and gave them vegetables." So in spite of all the other young men around, and even in spite of the fact that you didn't want to stick out in this situation, and you didn't want everybody to look at you and say mean things about you, in spite of all of that, Daniel and these three young men, his friends, stand up, and they ask this chief of the eunuchs, "Please, don't make me eat this. Give me something else to eat. I cannot eat this. I'll defile myself." And so they asked for vegetables and water. And amazingly, through the providence of God and the power of God, those vegetables and water made them look better and fatter than the young men eating the finest meats and the best wine. And so they get vegetables and water too. I would have been mad. I don't want vegetables. But you see here, they stood up. In spite of the peer pressure of those around them, in spite of the fact that they were going to stick out and other people were going to point fingers at them and other people might be mad, and in spite of the fact that it could have gone horribly wrong and they could have lost their lives. They could have lost their seat at the king's table. They could have been kicked back into captivity. They could have gone and eat what the rest of the Jews were eating, which certainly wasn't nearly this nice. And yet they stood up, and God blessed them for it. Let's look at four things Daniel did to beat peer pressure. First of all, to beat peer pressure, we must recognize the sin around us. Look here in verse 8. It says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank." So Daniel looks around in this new environment, and while a lot of people might have looked at it just wide-eyed at the spread of this food that the king brings in before them, everybody would have just been blown away by it. Daniel looks at it and he says, there's trouble here. The word that the scripture uses is the word defile himself. That's a sin word. It means I can't sin before God. I can't become unclean and dirty before God. And if I eat this, if I drink this, that's what's going to happen. Now, I don't know exactly what it was about this food that Daniel couldn't have partaken of. Some people think that perhaps it violated the dietary laws of the Jews, and other people think that it may have been sacrificed to these heathen gods. I'm not sure, but one way or another, he couldn't eat it. It would have made him unclean. So he refused. Now, somebody had taken the time to teach Daniel so that he knew you eat this and you don't eat this. God says this is okay, and he says this is not okay. Someone had taught him the law of God, and that teaching saved his soul in a foreign land. And when something came along that God had said was sinful, Daniel recognized it. And he said, I can't partake of that. The first essential step in us beating peer pressure is recognizing that ordinary, everyday situations contain sin. That sin is all around us, and it does not come to us with a name tag. And if we're not careful, we're not going to understand or see what it is. Now, that requires teaching first. We have to know what is right and wrong so that we can recognize it in a situation. And so we have parents who hopefully contribute to that, and we have time where we study the Bible together. But anyone who has the ability to understand can read the Bible and understand it to be able to recognize sin around them. But on top of that, recognizing the sin around us is going to require some thought. We're going to have to think about our lives. And we're going to have to think in the way God thinks. That things in the world have the potential to make us sin. Let me give you an example. This is 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10. It says, in like manner also that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair, gold, or pearls, or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. So God says there is a way of dressing that is immodest, that is improper, that is without moderation. And so it does not please Him. So we have to think about what that could mean today. For me, what kind of clothes does God want for me to wear? In other words, that's not just a passage in the Bible. That's a real principle in my life. So when I look at what I'm going to wear, the question is not, does this look good on me? Does this make me look pretty? The question is, does this please God? Or does this make me do something that God says is wrong? There is more to it than just looking good. Sin can be involved in something as simple as what we wear. We need to recognize that sin is all around us and that people are sinning around us all the time. You don't have people going around and saying, look, there's sin, there's sin, there's sin, but it's there. It's in our world. It surrounds us. And we can be caught up in it if we're not careful. We have to recognize the sin around us. In Hebrews 13 and verse 4, we read, marriage is honorable among all and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. There is a danger here in an improper sexual relationship. What the scripture calls fornication or adultery, that is any kind of sex outside of a marriage bond. So instead of asking the question, do I love this person enough to have sex with him or her? We need to ask the question, does God say this is okay? We need to recognize that even though some people drink and party and have a rowdy lifestyle, God says this. For we have sinned enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatry. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. That's 1 Peter 4, 3 and 4. Do you see what's happening here? That's the same lifestyle that's still with us. God says it's wrong, but people still do it, don't they? So we've got to be able to see, even though people do it and they're not struck down, even though people do it and a lot of people accept it, even though when we don't do it, they're going to speak evil of us, it's still sin. And until we recognize sin around us, we're not going to be able to beat peer pressure. We're not going to be able to have the moral fiber to say, this is a decision I will not make and a line I will not cross, because we don't even see that it's sin. Daniel recognized sin. And it led to him standing up and not sin. Second thing to beat peer pressure is to purpose in your heart to do what's right. Look again in verse 8 here of Daniel 1. It says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacy." It wasn't just that Daniel recognized the sin in eating the king's delicacy. It's that he said, "I'm not going to do that." He purposed in his heart. He committed himself. He thought about it beforehand. "I'm not going to do what's wrong." What's wrong? It was a conscious choice he made. These choices don't make themselves. We don't just wake up one day and our lives are completely free of sin and we're doing everything we want to do and it's all right with God. We have to choose it, don't we? And there are situations we're going to be placed in, like Daniel, where from no fault of our own, we have to stand up and make a choice. Like Daniel did, we have to purpose. We're going to do what's right. This is something that has to happen before we're in the situation. Daniel didn't come up with this idea as soon as the meat came. It was something he thought about and decided this is the best course. We have to think about what we're going to do before we're in the situation to do it. For example, it's too late when everyone is crowding around us with a beer in their hands for us to think about, "Well, I don't know, am I going to drink or not?" It's too late then. The decision is basically already going to be made. But if we can say right now, "I'm going to think about how I'm going to live my life and I'm not going to drink. I'm going to do what's right," then we're like, "Man, we've purposed in our heart, I'm going to do right." It's too late when we're alone with our boyfriend or girlfriend, or for those of us who are married, with someone who is not our mate, for us to think about, "Well, am I going to have sex with this person? Am I going to do this? Oh, I don't know." The situation begins to escalate, our judgment is impaired, and we have never even thought about what we're going to do. We need to be like Daniel and purpose in our hearts to do what's right. Choose your course now, and you'll be able to beat peer pressure. But if you don't, if you just say, "Well, I'll just go wherever the wind takes me, whatever I feel like doing, that's what I'll do," then we're going to end up being influenced by peer pressure every time. We're going to do whatever everyone around us is doing. And so we need to be like Daniel and think seriously about doing what's right. We have to say right now, "I am going to do what's right. No matter how badly I want to do what is wrong, no matter how much it's going to cost me to do what's wrong, that's what's important to me. And I will give up anything else." Can I remind you of something? In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 29, Jesus says, "If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell." It's important that we do what's right. How important is it? It's so important that even if we lost an eye, even if we had to cut off our hand, even if we lost part of our body, even if we lost our family, even if we lost all our money, it's more important to do what's right and lose everything than to go to hell. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? We've got to think about what doing right is going to mean. For Daniel, it meant he might lose his nice place in the king's palace and go back to being a slave. It means he might have been killed for his insubordination. At the very least, those other young men are going to resent him, aren't they? He thinks he's better than everybody. He doesn't have to eat what we eat. Purpose in your heart to do what's right, and you'll be able to beat peer pressure. Third thing, have the courage to stand up. Look at the story again in verse 8 Daniel 1 and verse 8. Now, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. You see, it wasn't enough for Daniel to just say, quietly, well, I really don't like this, but I'll go ahead and eat it anyway. I really would rather have something else, but I'm not going to make any waves. He requested. He brought it up. He stood up and said, I'm not going to do this. Please give me something else. But that's not the end of the story. Look in verse 10. The chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then he would endanger my head before the king. We've got a problem now, don't we? Daniel tries to stand up, but his boss says, nope, can't do it. Sorry. Sorry, if I change this, I might get in trouble, and you would endanger my head. You know what that means? I might be killed if you're not progressing like the king thinks you should. Now, Daniel could have just thrown up his hand and said, well, I tried. I tried to do what was right. I tried to stand up, but it didn't work out. But Daniel was really serious about not defiling himself. He was really serious about doing what was right, and that wasn't going to stop it. So in verse 12, he says, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. He says, here's a way we can make this work. I'm really serious about this, and so let's work something out where I don't have to do what I know is wrong. Daniel had the courage to stand up for what was wrong. And Daniel put a lot of thought into this, but you know, when it came down to the time to act, Daniel had to do something, didn't he? He didn't have any parents to take care of it for him. He didn't have a church to stand behind him. It was just him. Maybe his three friends involved in some way. But he had to say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to stand up and say, I'm not going to be defiled. Other people are going to think this is ridiculous. They're going to laugh me out of the room. They're going to think it's dangerous. They're going to think it's never going to work. But he has the courage to stand up anyway. Let me say it this way. Standing up to peer pressure is a choice that you must make. The preacher can't make it for you. Your parents and your friends can't make it for you. You must do what's right. And you must want to do what's right so much that you stand up to those who would try to make you do what's wrong. I need to stop and say here, I haven't said this yet, I just realized. Peer pressure is not just for young people. Young people certainly very susceptible to peer pressure. But in every age group, we have peers. We have people around us who are expecting things of us and who are an audience to our lives. And if we don't do things the way they see fit, we're going to feel some kind of repercussions, aren't we? And so we feel that. Even as adults, we feel the pressure of being conformed to the mold of what people expect. So don't think this is a lesson just to young people. Daniel stood up, and we all need to learn to have the courage to stand up for what is right. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 for a moment. Leave your marker here in Daniel 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. There will be a temptation when we're in this situation for us to say, but the situation was just too hard. I really didn't have any choice. I tried to do what was right, but it didn't really work, and I didn't see a way out. And there's always going to be, please hear me, in every temptation, there is a tendency for us to say, oh, it was just too much for me. Next time I'll do better, but that one was too hard. I just can't say no. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. Look at it with me. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. God has promised, God promised this. No temptation will be beyond what you can bear. We can handle it with His help. And He has also promised a way of escape, a way we can get out of the situation without sinning. We are never forced to sin. But let me tell you what we are forced to do. We're forced to either sin or stand up for what's right. And so we need to have the courage Daniel had to say, I'm not going to do what's wrong. I don't care who you are and what you tell me, you cannot make me do what's wrong. But that's just the thing. It's a choice. And we have to choose to stand up. We need courage to make the right choice and stand up. Young people, when you're in that situation where the pressure is on, the courage is what you need. Older folks, when other people are telling us, this is what you need to do and this is what you need to be, or they're criticizing decisions we have made to try to be right with God, we need the courage to stand up and do what's right and not be afraid to tell them why. Let's go back to Daniel 1. The fourth thing I want us to see, and then we'll begin to apply these things in a little more detail, is that we need to trust that God will take care of us. God is all over this story in Daniel 1. In verse 9 it says, God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. But in verse 15, look at this. At the end of the 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portions of the king's delicacy. You know, Daniel started on this program and he said, test us, water and vegetables, that's all we need. Because he believed God could make them look better than the other men with just water and vegetables. He trusted that if he stepped out in faith, did what was right, God would take care of him. And he was right. God did take care of him. God took care of him from every step of the way. In situations like these, we're always faced with the fear that things just might not work out. We ask questions like, what if I get fired or expelled or kicked off the team or put in jail? We need the trust that Daniel and his friends have. We also might need to ask, so what? But we need the trust to say that God will take care of us no matter what if we do His will. Let me give you a couple of passages to show you some of the promises God has given us about that. Proverbs 3 and verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He shall direct your paths. Passage we studied just last week, Matthew 6 and verse 33, but seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness and all these things, remember the needs of life, shall be added to you. Seeking God first, a blessing of what we need. 2 Timothy 4, verse 16, at my first offense, this is Paul speaking, no one stood with me but all forsook me, but the Lord stood with me and strengthened me. And the Lord will deliver me from every evil work and preserve me for His heavenly kingdom. Paul is not talking in vague terms there. He is saying, I was there before Caesar with nobody else, but Jesus was there. And He strengthened me and He delivered me and He will deliver me until He's done delivering me. That's a trust that God will take care of us. A trust that we need. And please understand that doesn't necessarily mean that we won't get fired or expelled or put in jail. Certainly Christians have suffered those things for centuries. And it didn't mean that God didn't take care of them. What we need to trust is that God will take care of us and bless us for our good if we do His will. Wouldn't we rather suffer and even die for doing what's right than to be successful and wealthy and privileged because we've done what's wrong? Recognize the sin around you. purpose in your heart to do right. Have the courage to stand up and trust that God will take care of you. Let's go to Daniel chapter 3. I want to look at another story that will reinforce this. In Daniel 3, let's begin reading in verse 1. It says, Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And King Nebuchadnezzar sent word to gather the satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So all those people gathered together for the dedication of the temple that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. We know what happens here. Nebuchadnezzar gives the word, bow down when you hear the musical instruments. Bow down to my idol. But there's a problem, isn't there? Here are three Jews, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those same three from Daniel 1. And they can't bow down to an idol. We worship the one true God, the one who said, you shall have no graven images. We can't bow down to an idol, especially an idol of a false god. How could we do that? That's the reason we're in captivity in the first place. So they don't bow down. Verse 8 says, therefore at that time certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. Verse 12, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Things are getting bad for these men because now these other people who are sort of angling for their jobs more than likely, they are accusing and criticizing, saying, they're defying the king. They're not worshiping your image. You said we all had to worship. And here these men are disobeying. Verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image which I have set up? Look down in verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. This is amazing. These three men are the only three men. Just picture a whole nation of people bowing down and three men standing up. Three men alone. And now here come all their fellow officials and they're accusing them and they bring them to the king, the most powerful man in the world, and in rage and fury he says, what are you doing? I'll give you one more chance. And then you're going in the furnace. Do you hear what they said? We don't serve your God. Our God can deliver us. But even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to your God. The rest of the story is, into the furnace they go, and out of the furnace they come, delivered by their God, saved by their God. I want you to notice these three men in this situation, they recognize the sin around them. They recognize that to bow down to this idol is not just a political matter. It was not just about making the king happy. It was sin. They purposed in their hearts that they were going to do what was right. A time came when they had to choose and say, you know, even though it's very, very, very tempting, no one would blame us for doing it. We can't do what's wrong. Then they had to have the courage to stand up on several occasions, to not bow down the first time, and then to stand before the king in defiance and say, throw us in the furnace if you have to, but I'm not bowing down. And then they trusted that God would take care of them. That's why they said that. Our God is able. But even if he doesn't, we're still not going to serve you. Brethren, friends, it's possible for us to beat peer pressure. But I want to really impress on you, that will not just happen. It will happen because of forethought and planning, and because of determined action to do what's right and live that out. Let's make this practical for just a moment. The lesson will be yours. Are there certain people in your life who have more influence on you than others? That's true for all of us, isn't it? Think about who those people are and why they have such influence on you. And be careful, because they can pressure you into doing things you should not. Are there certain sins that you have a weakness for? And if so, you need to think seriously about that. Now, we all have different weaknesses. Wearing immodest clothes is not really a weakness for me. Laziness, lack of self-control, pride, those are weaknesses for me. So I need to figure out what is it that is going to put me in a situation where I'm tempted by my weaknesses. So, in other words, we need to be thinking and recognizing the potential for sin in the situations we are in. And we need to be very careful. The perspective of the Scripture is there are a lot of things out there that can make me sin, and I've got to be very careful not to allow them to do that. Now, the second thing, what are you doing? What are you going to do what's right? Think about some of the regular situations that we're in. What will you do when someone offers you drugs and alcohol? Simple question. What are you going to do when somebody wants you to have sex with them? What do you do, men, when a girl walks by without enough clothes on? What are we going to do when someone is pressuring us to steal something? Or to say something we shouldn't say. Are we going to do what's right? You need to decide that right now. We need to think about it now. And then, no, don't just think about it in vague terms. Yes, I'd like to do what's right. Think about what are you going to say? What am I going to say? How will I say, no, I'm not doing that? Think about how they're going to react. Think about how am I going to get out of that situation. Think about it now. In fact, think about ways to avoid the situation altogether so that you don't even have to go through and worry about the peer pressure there. If you don't want your coworkers to pressure you to drink, you might not go with them to the bar. Now, have the courage to stand up. In situations like these, we're all familiar with the fact that our adrenaline gets pumping and our senses are on heightened alert, and we're often not ourselves. We need to be prepared for that. And we need to use that energy and that adrenaline to cause us to do what is right. You might not know the best way to deal with a situation, but we need to let our desire for right to control us. Rely on God, pray to God, trust that God will take care of us. And regardless of the situation, this is the vital principle. We can't just react. We can't just say, oh, well, I'll fly by the seat of my pants. Whatever happens, happens. That's how we have the problem of peer pressure in the first place. Let me tell you, I am tired of doing things I regret just because people push me into it. I'm tired of having my life dictated by what other people think. I'm ready to do what's right because it's right. I hope you are too. So think about the way people affect you and the subtle ways they try to get you to do things that are wrong. Remember the example of Daniel. Don't just react. Plan to do right and then do it. The sad truth is that young man who was hazed in California won't have another chance to beat peer pressure. But we are fortunate, because we still have opportunities to do the will of God. And for us, there is something much more serious at stake than simply our lives. Our souls hang in the balance. I urge you to think about these things and to prepare yourself to do what's right. There might be someone here who is not a Christian, and we want to offer you at this time the invitation of the Lord. Jesus calls to each one of us to come from a world of sin to come from a polluted, corrupted world and come into the light of His grace, to be washed in His blood. Is there someone here who needs to give their life to Jesus and who is ready to walk with Him and become His disciple? We stand ready to help you now as we stand and sing to encourage you.